Yeah, so to your 2 points, kind of on the pre-scout piece and just like doing what your team needs to do to be successful, not really worrying about the opposition. Like it made me think of two things. First, like this past year, with our team, like we started doing that a little bit of worrying less about the pre-scout and worrying more about what we need to do. And it wasn't so much in the sense that like we weren't providing a pre-scout. I think like from a player's perspective, they want to see a pre-scout, and our players have made that clear that they do want to see it. So we provide one video and like a printout for every game. But and for myself, like definitely, like running the PK, like I like to watch the opposition power play just to know, like not so much because I think we need to change anything, but I don't want to be surprised by something in game and think back and feel like I should have prepared more. But where I think we found some success this year was with not adjusting what we did midweek or not changing what our practice plan was going to be based on whatever we found out in the pre-scout. So I think there were times for sure myself in the past, whether it was here, another school or another team, where say it's Monday, you're playing Friday, and you look at what your opponent is doing. And so you think for Tuesday and Wednesday of this week's practice, like, we should focus on X. And you get away from sometimes doing that. You get away from what makes your team successful, and you start just trying to counteract whatever the other team does. And I think where we got to this year, we talked about it as coaches, like, I think then you kind of lose your own identity as a team. And it's just like, what if you asked a player on the team, what do we do well? I think they may not know when you're constantly changing, and they may feel like, well, what we do well is like dependent on who we're playing. And it shouldn't be that way. It's like it should be what we do well is X, Y, and Z, and everyone knows. And I think that's where pre-scouts can become too much almost, and you can become too bogged down by the opponent and not focused enough, not focused as much or enough on what you need to do to be successful. And that leads you or leads me into what you were saying with Michigan and taking away, let's say you take away that D option. Well, we'll use our third forward high. If you take away the third forward, we'll go low to high to the D. Like they have a clear identity and a clear, and maybe identity isn't the right word, but they have a clear principle or philosophy that they're working with. And they're trying to do certain things with the puck, where if you do take away one option from them, they're going to find the second, they're going to find the third options that they have. And so where that goes back to pre-scouts for me is like, if you're spending so much time on making sure that the team you're playing Friday can't do X, Y, and Z, you don't know what your own X, Y, and Z's are that you do well. And could you just devote all your time towards yourself and your own team getting better, so that if you do play a team where the pre-scout is, you're doing the pre-scout as a coach and you're like, I think they might be able to take away our X option, we still got Y and Z in the bag. There's just not enough time and capacity, I think, for players and coaches to teach and learn all of that at once. You can't possibly, in my opinion, I don't know, maybe at the NHL level or where you have more time, and it's a full-time job, but I think for a lot of levels, like there's just not enough time for the coaches to learn it and the coaches to learn it so that they can teach it to the players well enough to have all the pre-scout options nailed down and all the X, Y, and Z, I'm calling them, options or strengths of your own team locked down as well. Like something's got to give. And so for me, and when for what you're saying, and I agree with it, and what we've kind of learned this year, like focus on what you can do and what your team needs to do to be successful. And bank on being like the best version of yourself and winning that way. And you can always add in a wrinkle of something here or there that you want to take away from your opposition. But I think sometimes you can drive yourself as a coach crazy with the pre-scout options, and you end up losing your own identity as a team in the process.
Yeah, it makes me think of two different things, and I'll go to your second point first, and then I'll loop back to the first one. But the second one is like the word that comes to mind is bandwidth. I think you're limited by not only your own bandwidth, or like time constraints, as you were saying, but also like the bandwidth of the players. And the analogy that I'll use and make it like personal to me, and we've talked about this before, but it's like if I used to read a ton of different books and I would read them one time through and I would glean almost nothing from them, no matter how much I highlighted. It was just on to the next book, whatever. And some of that, sure, will stay with you and you can recall it later. But I've changed my approach to how I'm reading, where I've read one author for probably the last 6 months. And I'm starting to be able to take more, remix more, make it my own, and just like be able to recall and reference back better. And I think that's analogous to what you were saying. Like, if you're constantly, and you talked about like, if you asked our players what our identity is, I think if you're in that constant, like, well, we're going to pre-scout this opponent hard, then we're going to pre-scout this opponent hard, then we're playing a third opponent next weekend, and you're just reading that team's book one time through, you're like cramming for a test, and then you just move on to the next thing. But I think the analogy of reading one book or one author multiple times through is staying. And to what Michigan is doing, like, we know our stuff so well, forwards, backwards, upside down, and sideways, that no matter what they throw at us, we can just do our thing. So, I don't know if that analogy fits perfectly, but it makes sense in my brain right now. I'll kick it to you over if you have thoughts on that, and then I'll circle back to your first one.
I think that analogy makes complete sense. I think it's if you're taking we're talking about Michigan, like if Michigan is say they're I'm just gonna throw out teams and know nothing about whether this is true or not, but say they're playing to start Michigan State the next weekend. And so they're like, hey, against Michigan State, like we gotta generate offense from below the goal line. Okay, great. So all week they're trying to generate offense below the goal line, below the goal line. It's all they're focusing on. They're not talking about point shots, they're not talking about full F3 high, nothing. It's all below the goal line. Who cares about the result? But you go and you play Michigan State twice. Maybe you win twice. That's kind of besides the point. Doesn't matter. Now the next weekend you're playing Ohio State. And against Ohio State, you got to find the slot because they get lost and whatever. So you got to find whether it's F3 in the slot, D diving down, but slot's going to be open. So now all week offense, your drills are focused on, your games are focused on finding guys in the slot. Like if you that was just those are 2 weeks. I'm not going to do it for the whole season. But if you do that
Right.
for the entire season, you're talking about 35 games, two game series. So you're talking about 17 series where you're always doing something different. First of all, I can almost guarantee you're not going to win every game just because it's impossible almost to go undefeated in a season at that level. But besides, if you do win majority, even if you do win the majority of your games, like your team loses whatever, they don't know what they do well. And there's going to be times in the game where that shit isn't working for whatever reason. Ohio State changed their D zone before you played them. And so now, like, what do you fall back on? All you did was the slot work. What do you fall back on? Do you have anything that you know you can do well just because your team is innately good at it? And not really innately, but from practicing. So I think to your analogy of the book, it's like, yeah, you can read a bunch of different books once and do a bunch of different pre-scouts once and try to glean insights from them. But there's also a different way of going about it where you could just sit here and say, hey, let's read this one author a million times over. Let's look at just one team and, or sorry, just our team and get really good at these things and build from that foundation. I think both can work. But I think the way that you're talking about as far as one author, a lot, our team solely focused on that, you're gonna have more success that way for you. You're gonna understand more. You're gonna learn more for the team. You're gonna have more wins, whatever you want to measure success with, but you're gonna have more success, I think, that way.
Yeah, and then I think both the points are kind of connected, and I was going to get back to that first one, and now I think it connects even more. I was just watching a video, and I will link it in the show notes, But there's this guy that I follow. He's currently a manager at a Subway. But he used to be strength coach. He owned a gym. He used to do a bunch of things. But I follow him because I think his writing is incredible. His name's Hunter Charneski. And he just did a video about it. It's life analogous, and it's analogous to what we're talking about here, but it starts very like Subway manager specific. But it's like he has to do an inventory every week of everything, how much rotisserie chicken they have to how many cookie bags that they have. And he has to count them all up and just do a basic inventory and report that so they know what to order. And they have to be within a certain percentage of like margin of error or whatever. But the margin of error is asymmetrical based on the value of like the goods. So like he's like, if I miss 10 cookie bags, the number 10 might be more than if I miss one singular pound of rotisserie chicken. But the rotisserie chicken is more. It contributes to like my margin of error more than if I miss 10 cookie bags. So to make that now what we're talking about, it's like coaches, whether it's on themselves with their health or with their performance, or it's with their team and pre-scouting and how much of it do we really need to do? I think the better question is like, he talks about like, where are my cookie bags in my life and where is my rotisserie chicken? So it's like, do we even know what's important? And you're smiling. I bet you have a lot to say on this. But it's like, no, I'll just kick it to you because I think I've done enough to give you some legs to run with.
Yeah, that's a great. I know who you're. I know the guy you're talking about, but I've never heard of that type of analogy. I think where I go with this is like, it is really easy to mix. Not mix. It is really easy to confuse the cookie bags for the rotisserie chickens and coaching because it's not obvious which ones cost more and which ones cost less. And so we're talking about pre-scouts. I'll stick with that. With pre-scouts, it's not to say that they're not important. In my eyes, pre-scouts are cookies. They're cookie bags. Team culture, team identity, like your team leadership, your philosophies of how you want to play or what you want to do. Those are your rotisserie chickens. Those are the things that really matter. And you can have the sickest pre-scouts, and you can have the most detailed write-ups, and you can have the best power play and penalty kill systems in place as far as just like what you're supposed to do. But if your locker room stinks, and I mean like your team culture of your locker room stinks, or you have leadership gaps, or you don't have a general philosophy of like, okay, how do we want to play overall? What is like, not how do we want to play like 1-2-2, 3-1-1, whatever the hell you want to call different things, but like, how do we play in terms of like, what are our principles of play? Are we a team that wants to like attack off transition? Whatever, I don't need to get into that. But if you don't have any of that in place, then like, all these cookie bags that you spend a lot of time on don't really matter. And I think I kind of just said it, but I think one of the hard parts of that is that it is really, really difficult to know if your team culture is in a good place. And it is also very difficult to measure on a short timetable. So, team culture or like leadership, like you've got to take 2, 4, 5 year spans and examine, is it getting better or is it getting worse? Is it staying the same? It's hard to measure even when you're looking at that. Like, how do you really know? It's difficult as a coach. It is not difficult to know if your pre-scout is tight or to know if your the video that you're showing is good, because that's it's much more quantitative, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And you can tell, like, I can look at a pre-scout and I know if I put good effort into it or I didn't. Is there valuable information in there, or is it fluff? Like, it's pretty obvious. And it's not so obvious with this stuff, you know, as far as team culture goes, your leadership goes. Like, I don't know, there's not a perfect way to measure it. And even if there was, you can't measure it on a game to game basis. It's got to be a 10 game basis, you know, first semester, second semester. If you're in the NHL, 40 games, 80 games, like, you got to really give it time. And then this is a bag of can of worms we don't even need to get into, but we don't then give a lot of coaches, like at the high levels, enough time to see those things through. And now you got to give 5 years, you know, give 6 years to a coach to let their culture and everything take hold. So I think, back to just like the basic of your rotisserie chickens versus your cookie bags, like, for coaches to be able to identify which are which and then devote your time, like, to the chickens is smart.
Yeah. And I know you just, I'm gonna ask you a question and it's not gonna take long. So I apologize that you just did your take and I'm gonna give you more. But I think it would be valuable. You and I have talked about this, but I think it'd be valuable for the audience. We were talking about whether it's the chicken being analogous to the big rocks and the cookie bags being analogous to just like, maybe you don't need to do as much of it. You talked about with like one of the big rocks that you guys really picked up and like looked at and then put in a different place was your culture this year around ownership. Do you want to kind of speak to, staying with this like rotisserie chicken analogy, like your big rock that, and I think what you're getting at too is like the feedback loop with culture is longer. It's a shorter feedback loop to ask the players after a meeting or just know intuitively, like, I might have screwed that like PK pre-scout up, or like that didn't go over as well as I wanted it to. That feedback loop is a lot shorter than we read Extreme Ownership and we taught those principles this year. And like, I have to wait till halfway through the year or at the end of the year, or maybe even after the end of 2 years to like see how that's actually going. Let me just kick that over to you if you want to hit on that.
Yeah. So last year, one of our coaches meetings, we talked about reading this book, Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. And it's basically 12 chapters that are all about how to own everything in your world and look inward before you ever look outward. And just, he breaks it down from a military standpoint, and then he gives business examples. And it essentially, reading it forces you as a reader to think about how you could obviously exercise this in your life better. And we felt like for our team, there were multiple times throughout the previous years, like, just not this year, but the one before we started reading this book, where just like there were opportunities maybe to recognize, like, whether it's a captain or a freshman, or it doesn't matter, anyone in between, like, there were opportunities to exercise a little bit more ownership over like your own role in blank event, good or bad. And we weren't always just like emotionally mature enough and didn't have maybe the capability to look inward first. And so we're, you know, there's like some challenges at our school, just as far as like our, the simple thing is like, we don't have a rink on campus. So everyone that we play in our conference has a rink on campus. So it was really easy when things aren't going well to just be like, well, we don't have a rink on campus. So like, yeah, it's hard to win. And it's just like so easy to just look outward and just be like, that's the problem. And it's like, in reality, like, that's not true. Like, you can win. There are a million teams in college hockey that do have success without the perfect facilities. And of course, some of the best do have the best, but that's not in and of itself a reason that teams win or lose. And so we wanted to get to a point where like we could stop looking at those outer things, those things outside of our control, and blaming them and start just like taking ownership ourselves. Like, what can we do to impact this today and make it better for ourselves? And so you put it perfectly. Like the problem, the challenge with reading the book is that you read the book in June, July, and August, and then you didn't play a game until October, sorry, November. And then your season ends in March. Like, the feedback loop is long as shit. Like, you don't know if it's working, because when we said this so much as coaches, like, hey, it seems like, because we read the book as a team over the summer, and then we met with just our leadership group, not the whole team, but as coaches, we met with the leaders and we talked about the book, and they had met with they had broken the team up into little groups. So they met with individual groups, captains, and then they kind of brought the feedback to us, and it seemed like all pretty good during the year. Like, it seemed like, all right, this stuff makes sense. And like, it sounds like, you know, the players, sorry, not during the year, during the summer, it sounds like the players are picking up good pieces from this, and the captains are bringing it to our attention. And now us as coaches are having a good conversation. But, you know, what about in game 3, when blank happens, how are we going to react? And I'll give our team a ton of credit that, and our leaders, that they were much better than it had been. And it was probably a big reason why we just were able to win more hockey games, because we were cognizant of how each and every guy in and of ourselves can impact this if we are willing to take ownership first before blaming blank person, situation, event, whatever it might be. But to your point, like, the hardest part of that, and the reason why I think maybe it's not always easy to do, is that the feedback loop is so long. Like, and even here, we're a year removed from that now, and we look at it and like, we still have room to grow. We still have to continue to get better at some of those areas of leadership, ownership, stuff like that. And we got to double down and do it again, and believe, not hope, but believe that next year it'll continue to improve. That takes like commitment though. And not just like, I'm not talking about coaches. It takes commitment from the players to believe that we can do this year 1, year 2, year 3. And you got to remember, some of the guys that read that book last year, they're not on the team anymore. They graduated. And we're going to read the book again this summer. But next summer, there's going to be another group of like 8 guys that graduate. So some of the commitment that the players have to show to the program and to this like belief, they're never going to see the light of day of all of it, because they're going to leave. And so you have to have like a very, you know, Simon Sinek type long-term approach, and you can't be focused on like the short-term, are we going to win this year? Like, the reality is that like nobody on the team may see the end result in the most glorious way that it could come to fruition, because it might take 7 years. And that there's no college hockey player that gets a 7-year contract. So, yeah, that got a little long-winded, but that's where we went as far as just trying to improve some of those areas for our team that were longer feedback loops and less about pre-scouts and opponents and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you need a couple red shirts and a COVID year like that. I think you sent me that basketball player that played for like 7 years somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the tail end of what you're saying, like you said, Simon Sinek, the infinite game stuff, and I thought you were going to say Sam Hinkie, but like I think the beauty in what you said, and like Greg Powers with Arizona State, his tagline since starting, their motto is be the tradition, because their new program, they don't have one yet. And it kind of like Greg's messaging to his players, from what I've studied, is similar to Sam Hinkie, where Sam Hinkie took the 76ers job when they were at their absolute worst. And he said from very early on, he had the perspective, because you want to talk a long-term thinker, that guy. But he said, like, I'm going to get fired or resign, or like legitimately be dead before I'm going to set this team up for success, but I'm not going to be here when we experience success. I already know that. And 3 or 4 years in, like, they're calling for his job and they're still like in their tanking process, tanking in air quotes, if you guys can't see the video. And they're calling for his head, but all of a sudden, you fast forward 4 years from when he resigns, and I don't think the 76ers have missed the playoffs in like 3 years, and they're consistently right there. And it was all the work of a guy like Sam Hinkie and like the slow, incremental, big rocks that have those longer feedback loops is the same thing that ASU's building. It's the same thing that when you look at the Detroit Lions and the Detroit Red Wings right now, when I'm a Michigan kid, if you guys don't know that, so clued into those two builds, but like they're calling for Yzerman and Lalonde's job right now, and they've incrementally inched their way forward in terms of percentage of games won in the 5 years that Yzerman's been there and the 2 years that Lalonde's been the coach. And it's the same thing that Hinkie was getting. It was, you should be fired. It's not working fast enough. But everything in life, except in our illusory 2024 world where things happen virally, the real stuff builds with like inch by inch painful incremental gains or gains until it takes that like non-linear spike out of nowhere. But it's because they've just been inching their way forward slowly and painfully. So that's where my brain goes, if you have thoughts on that.
One of the best things I read on that, and I actually think it was in The Infinite Game by Cynic, and I believe it was the Beatles, but it might be a different band. But they were, again, air quotes, overnight success. And the reality was that they were playing in random bars in Germany that no one came to watch them or listen to them in for like 5 years, 10 years before they finally, quote, broke through. And I think that's the truth. It's the biggest fallacy about successful organizations, people, whatever it might be. But like success is not, you don't just like get successful overnight. Actually, I was thinking about this the other day when we were talking and it didn't come up, but like the blog that I do with another friend of mine, his name's Alec Robertson. Like, I don't know exactly. I think we have like something like 200 something followers on Twitter, and we'll get like, you know, maybe a couple hundred page views when we put out an article. But like, we've been doing this since like 2020, right around when COVID hit. He was doing it a little bit before that. So a good 4 years, maybe a little over 4 years, it's gone relatively nowhere as far as like, it's not getting more traction. People are looking at it all the time, but that's not the TikTok world and like the viral video. Like, yes, could you strike gold and all of a sudden like you're famous off of that, or you're well known off of this like video you made of your workout routine? Like, for sure you could. The most enduring successful people, and like you brought up Sam Hinkie, like that takes time and commitment and effort that most people just aren't willing to do. As soon as you get like, for Sam Hinkie, as soon as you get to like year 3, 4, 5, people are like, well, we haven't won yet. He's not good. We're not winning. We're not winning championships. Like, why are we keeping him around? Someone else can do it. And then you always talk about this, like you interrupt the compounding, you interrupt those like benefits of having someone consistently year over year preach the same messages and have the same principles in place. And it's such a problem when you really like step back and think about it, in my opinion, because you look at the highest levels, and you just brought up the Red Wings. Like, there's no denying that what Lalonde, Yzerman have done in the last, I don't know how many years they've been there, but 2 or 3, like it's been pretty good. I mean, the Red Wings were an absolute dynasty that fell off a huge cliff and couldn't get out of the basement for a good 5+ years. So for them 10. To be, oh yeah, I mean, I don't, 10, no, okay.
I'm
so
just even fucking, worse. I'm just fucking with you. Yeah.
So now, like, now you have a coach and a GM who's come in, and like, you missed the playoffs by a point. Like, I want you to run that back next year and the next year, and talk to me we joke about this a lot on our staff. Like, I'm going to close my eyes and talk to me in 2 years and let me know how it went with the Red Wings. With our team, it's like we might want to do something. It's like, I'm going to close my eyes and wake me up in March and let me know how it went. And it's like, because I don't want to change it. I don't want to sit here and interrupt the benefits that we might be getting because we think something different could work better, or because drop NHL name who's going to get fired in the next month and the Red Wings could bring him in and he's had success at X NHL team. Like, so yeah, I'm rambling now at this point, but just I think the idea that these things happen overnight, these successful organizations just come about overnight and people just end up in the NHL overnight or they end up in the NFL overnight. Like, it's not real. It's not how it works. It takes years and years of sticking to the same process and being committed to that as a team, as an individual, as an organization, whatever it may be. And I think those people that realize that, and whether it's a player, coach, organization that realizes that, they're going to have a lot of success, i.e. Tampa Bay Lightning. But if you don't view things that way, like, I think you run this like pointless race that you may as well just remove yourself from because you're never going to have the success that you think you should.
Yeah, I guess the one I have another. I feel like I'm turning into the host and you're turning into the guest for this one, but it is what it is. I think there's value because you're coaching right now and you're in one of those like positions, kind of like comparable to the Red Wings, where you're starting to compound and build and change a culture. So I guess my question, going back to a couple points ago, would be, and to kind of piggyback off what you were just saying, like, is there something that you guys looked at this year where last year you might have changed it, and this year you were like, let's let it ride and see what happens? And if you don't have a specific example, I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but if there is one, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, one, it was for sure the easiest one to. So my first year, and I can only speak to like the 2 years I've been here.
Right.
But my first year, I helped run the power play, and I think we ended up changing the power play probably upwards of 3 times. Not just like the guys in the units, but also like what we were trying to do. And I can think of at least 3 different units that we had. And this year we had 2 units. So I then, like, going into this year, this past season, one of the things that we felt was important with the power play was to not change it. And I think our power play finished my first year here. I think we finished at like 14%, or actually I think it was lower. I think it was like 12 or 11. It was not great. Not great at all. Regardless, like 11, 12, not good is my point. And this past year, going into the year, we kind of thought like, all right, let's have 2 units, of course, just like the year before. Let's not change them. Like, let's commit to sticking with them from game 1 to game 27, it ended up being. And look, I think one of the most commonly talked about thing from our staff this off season has been we got to improve our power play. So on its face, it didn't necessarily do better. I think percentage wise, we finished at like 17, but from like a culture and like momentum perspective, it didn't always feel like it was at 17%. And a lot of the players have even said that. But we committed to sticking with it from game 1 to game 27, to the point that actually a couple of days ago, one of the players asked, like, was there a reason we didn't change it sooner? And he got the exact response I'm giving. It was myself and our head coach talking about it. And we gave the exact response that we're giving now. It's like, look, we changed it so much the year before that we felt like this year was important to not change it. And I don't know that that brought about optimal results. I do know that it brought out better results than the year before. The year before, changing it multiple times felt like in the moment the right thing to do. But again, it got back to that pre-scout idea that like, what are we trying to do? We don't even know. We're constantly changing. And this year, although the units may have not connected the way we would have liked them to, and although it maybe didn't operate at the percentage or the clip that we wanted it to, we at least were all committed to making it work from game one to game 27. And now next year, like, you've kind of gone to both extremes. You've tried the year one, you tried doing a bunch of different things. Year two, you tried doing one thing. And now year three, you know, like, all right, maybe we don't need to be so strict on never changing, but we can definitely take a little bit from that year one lesson of like, let's not change this thing all the time. So there's other examples too of things that maybe we decided not to change going into year two, or that we're not going to change. Like for me going into year three next year. But that's the biggest one, I think, that speaks to the example you're talking about.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I think we've come full circle on this part of the conversation, part two. If you guys haven't listened to part one and you're just kind of hopping in for the first time, or someone shared the show with you, we have a part one of this conversation. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple. Check us out if this is the first time and you're just getting a link from someone else. Go back to the very first episode too and let us know what you think. Reach out to us. We'll drop our Twitter links below. We'd love to hear some feedback, and we will see you on the next one.